Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends.
Retro Recall.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
In honor of John getting back into playing as Drukhari, we're covering them today. Sorry, I write the podcast, so I have all the power.
I do really want to talk about how this went, because we're planning what we're going to cover, and I get the, all right, Brad, let's talk about what we're going to do. And I go, we should do this, 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 and this. And John goes, cool, I want to play Drukhari, get my Drukhari out. So we're going to do a Cabal episode. And I'm like, yep, okay. Oh yeah, I guess that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm painting up my Drukhari. I'm making my real space raid for some tournaments. And so, yeah, we're going back into Drukhari because it's top of mind. Next week, we'll get into more Brad stuff. Spoiler
at the
end of the episode. So, 40K Lorecast, the weekly show focused on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please continue to follow and comment in the cast. It's really helping our algorithm, pushing us up to a lot more listeners. A lot of you have done it already. I am enjoying the comments. They are sometimes quite funny, especially around the Where in the World is the 40K Lorecast series. That seems to be a big hit. So we're going to keep doing that too. If you like the cast, you want more of Brad, click on the show notes. You'll find links over to our YouTube page for the 40K Lorecast. There you have our Q&A sessions, our other show, The History of 40K, and actually some more stuff looks like upcoming, more of 2026 projects. If you're listening to this in 2026, good news. It's already there.
Huzzah!
Yeah, TBD. One of my favorite parts of this is our Patreon. So for those of you who don't know, we have a Patreon. The Patreon helps us expand our show out. We have one tier and one tier only. It's $4.99 a month. That'll get you this show and the History of 40K ad-free on all podcasting platforms. But if you live in a place called the Green City in the Sun, it would be 644.96 Kenyan shillings. They still use shillings, which is cool. Nairobi, that's where we're going today. Nairobi is the only city in the world with a national park inside of it, which I then had to look up. And it's not really inside of it. It's kind of touching it. So technically it's inside of it, but this park is pretty big. And it also is only fenced on three sides. So anyway, but Kenya is actually pretty cool. Randomly, I actually learned rugby from a man from Kenya. So that's where I first picked that game up. Kenya is cool as hell because you've got the Great Rift Valley, which is 39 million hectares in size. So that's not small, unless I got that math wrong. Equally possible. Equally possible. I did that, by the way, I did that myself. I took the dimensions of it and then put it into an online calculator. So if I just said a number and someone out there is like, you just described the entire landmass of Asia, possible. I actually don't know what a hectare is. I'm American.
We measure everything in cubits. Yeah, exactly. Cubits and refrigerators.
Another cool thing about Kenya is the Turkana, which is the world's largest desert lake, which then made me go on a deeper dive into John information. So fun fact number two for everybody. Welcome to the world of useless knowledge. A desert lake and an oasis. What's the difference? Simple. A desert lake is water in the middle of a desert. An oasis is when said water feeds vegetation. Now you know. Anyway.
And lastly, knowing our Discord. Half the battle. Yeah.
There we go. I was waiting for you to fill that in. I was like, come on, don't leave me hanging here. It's like that cold blood, like, you know, the high five thing. Lastly, our Discord, link in the show notes as always. Our Discord is an incredible place to come and interact with anyone around 40K. We really do love this thing a lot. It's been an incredible boon for us as far as being able to interact with people. I'm in there quite a bit, so is Brad. It's a great way to talk to us about shows, ask us questions, tell me the things I got wrong. They are every episode. There will be stuff wrong in this one too, guys. I am very far from perfect. But it is an incredible resource for a lot of people, and I think it's a really healthy community. So I really invite everyone to come in there, interact, ask your questions, get your advice, and just have fun. Massive thank you to our mods, and there are not a few of them. Doc, Ars, Toba, Tyrant, Herr Schmidt, Zemsta, Jay, Solarzia, Cthulhu, Query, Maestro, Steve, Gers, Noogles, Awargamon, Twindemise, Curl, Slanesh, and Silva. You guys are doing an incredible job, and I am light years thankful for it, because I could not have, just on a basic level, organized this thing, let alone managed it the level you all do. So big thank you to you guys for doing that. With all that out of the way, Real Space Raids. There are three ways you interact with the Drukhari. One, you go to Kamra.
There's so not.
What?
Hold on. Let's go with number one. You go to Kamra, the Dark City. Okay, you have made bad decisions, and or you're at the end of, or you're at the end of exile when you accidentally walked through a gate and got to the Dark City. Sorry, Tau Stealth Suit Leader. That's what happens.
Or you're Jagadai Khan just hanging out.
Wrong enough. Lots of people actually enter the Dark City. However, I say there's two, because your second one is somehow you surprise them in space, and that doesn't happen because they make raids and they leave. The only time they ever get surprised in space is because of plot armor from other people that want to talk to Drukhari.
Yeah. The reason why I go to the space one is that technically a lot of the Corsair fleets are Drukhari. So that's where it's like you can bump into them.
Those are mixed fleets. They don't count.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. You would bump into Drukhari. But that's my point. You're going to see Drukhari in Kamara because you went to where they all live. You're going to see them in space because they're on Corsair fleets. Or they come to you, which is the real space raid. This is bad things. So because the Drukhari, for the record, makes this really clear. They're not diplomats. You know, they're not showing up.
There's still a reason that their rule is called power from paid.
Yes.
We're not showing up to negotiate.
Yeah, not a lot of emissaries coming in out of the Drukhari. Like, oh, hey, we want to set up a trade with you. Well, what's the trade about? We want to kidnap and torture all of your civilians. And give the right imperial governor. Okay, tell me more.
In my mind, I definitely need a Drukhari, an Archon modeled up with a top hat and a monocle. Let me tell you.
I've got an incredible deal for you. So the real space raids, what we're going to focus on today, how they happen, where they happen, and more. But let's start actually the most important question of why do we have real space raids? And real space raids occur because of the fall of the Eldar. And this is, I'm going to be honest, some of the stuff we're going to cover here, I have to kind of infer because it's not written out that clearly, but in effect.
But it is, it's a survival. Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is like the origins of it is a little bit goofy, because what you have is Slaanesh was born because of just the decadence of the Eldar. And when she did this, she in effect cursed the Eldar. We've covered the fall enough times. I think it's like seven casts. We've ended up talking about the fall at some point. So meh. There's now four ways that the Eldar deal with Slaanesh being alive, because Slaanesh is eating their souls. Yep. For Craft World Eldar, they wear a soul stone within their armor, and this stone protects their soul from Slaanesh grabbing it. And both while they're walking around, but also when they die, the stone absorbs their soul. So Slaanesh can't get it unless she gets the stone and breaks it.
They put it in the Infinity Circuit, and then they can do stuff with it.
Yep. Yeah, the next group is, if you're a Harlequin, they still have their god. Kegarak, Segarak, I always get this wrong.
How about you just skip that and go with the Laughing God, my friend, the Laughing God?
No, I'm going to go with Shezirak. I'm just going to get it wrong each time.
They're just not even close.
Really? I know. Look, my last name is Barsadi. You know, people in my life who've called me Biscotti, like somehow I'm some baron to some great cookie fortune. I don't know, but it comes up all the time. So I'm allowed to mispronounce Chegarak, Higarak. We'll go for it. But whenever Harlequin dies, Kegarak, whatever it is, will actually steal the soul away from Slaanesh before she can grab it. And then, I guess, resurrects them. That part I'm never that clear on. But anyway.
It actually is really funny, though, because the god specifically does that to mess with Slaanesh.
Oh, there's a middle finger as he goes past.
Oh, there's a reason it's the Laughing God.
Yeah. Oh, he's just, nope. Yeah. Yeah. He's giving him the one bird salute as well, he grabs the soul. The newer one is Yanari, because that obviously we're less than 10 years of Yanari lore now.
And we actually just stopped the lore too. The lore hasn't continued. So,
yeah. Well, I'm sure maybe 11th edition will be here eventually. For them, when they die, their soul goes to Yanit, not to Slaanesh. So still lose your soul, but it goes to the god you like, not the god you don't like. And that's a key difference.
I just imagine the two gods sitting at like the Family Feud thing where they're both trying to hit the button.
Now, the last group is the Drukhari, and they have a really unique one. And I'll be honest, it's an odd one because it doesn't really line up that much into the lore, but it is a key part of the lore. And so what I mean by that is I don't fully understand how this functions. So we cover the Drukhari a lot. Death is really common for the Drukhari. They are not the dying race the craft world are. We don't really know how they're doing it, if it's cloning, all that, but there are a lot of Drukhari being made consistent.
Well, throw it out there again. The Dark City isn't just a city. It is an infinite amount of webway space with billions/trillions of Drukhari in there, along with a lot of other people.
Yeah, I'm also going to call that out. We always say, the webway is infinite, but you have to build stuff in the webway. You have to construct the webway. So I'm always...
Settle down, party pooper. It's an infinite amount of awesome webway, cool Drukhari space.
Yeah, it's an infinite amount of space that's also limited, but not limited. It really depends on the writer. That's the better way of explaining it.
All I'm saying is the Dark City kind of works like Sex Panther, because 60% of the time, it works every time. But... because of what happened with Slaanesh, and because of the fact that they're not in real space, but not in warp space, they are effectively withering, but very slowly while they're in, but very quickly when they go into real space, and they effectively, again, power from pain. They need to basically power up, and they need to do that by other people's suffering.
Yeah, I referred to Slaanesh, her effect on the Drukhari as being a D&D death curse, but it's on your soul, not in your body. So every day.
Really cool adventure. The death curse is in.
Oh, is it really?
You go down to Chult. You go down to the Aserok's tomb. Aserok, I think I just goofed that. I just brutalized Arsrock. The name.
Arsrock. I don't even know what we're talking about, but I'll add in my own one. Arsrock. The Rock. Anyway.
Rock. But yeah, you're 100% right. I just want to go into what it was, because it's very slow while they're in the Dark City, while they're in the Webway, but it juices up when they leave. And this is why they don't just stay out.
But there's a key piece. So this is what makes it weird. So Slaanesh is able to pull from their soul in this death curse. But as your soul gets pulled out, so does your energy level, your strength, you actually get weaker, slower, all those things. But like an energy bar in a video game, you can also bring it up. So think of it less as a soul and more as a soul meter is how I look at it, right?
Oh, 100%. Every minute but you can overcap it then, because the bar actually can go way beyond, because it's not just a set bar.
And this is where the comparison, because I have the show Retro Recall, I'm doing a lot of old gaming. So now I'm replaying Zelda. I'm replaying these old games. And what this reminds me of is in Zelda, when you find the little hearts, it's not that it refills your meter. It actually makes your meter larger.
Yeah.
This they can't really explain how this happened, but it appears that something occurred with the birth of Slaanesh that made their souls different. And the reason I go this way is that during the fall, the Eldar were doing all this decadence. And they were obviously taking a lot of joy in it. But I don't think, it sounds from reading the books, like it wasn't just they were taking joy. They were taking power out of it. This was actually giving them sustenance. But the people who were part of that fall all still died. So the inference I have to make here is that before the fall, they were getting juiced up and powered from the pain and the suffering. But after the fall, once Slaanesh's death curse came on them, and I talked about this in the Drakkari episode, I feel like it kind of broke the walls. And so instead of it being something that would fill you up to being satisfied and full, it now became almost like an unquenching thirst, like we were just discussing, where now instead of me taking that heart and it giving me full HP, it actually takes my HP and adds 25%. And each time, 25%, 25%. So I now, in the case of like a Vect, can be borderline godlike in power, which is why I like he's not in the game anymore. I don't think Vect should have ever been a model in the game. I own one.
Boo.
In the game because, well, he should have been
awesome into sauce.
The problem is, all right, so we've recorded a cast talking about 6th edition going into 7th edition 40K for history of 40K, talking about Forge World models. Vect is the definition of what should have been a Forge World model of like, well, what is he? Well, he's only T3. How many wounds is he? 4. What else is he? He has a 1-up invulnerable sit. You mean a 2-up?
I mean, no, he did get 1-up. Smoked by mandrakes, so there is that.
Yeah, and then what happened?
Well, he didn't do anything to the mandrakes. He didn't want them to show up every time he went to the bathroom.
He got smoked by mandrakes, and then...
Oh, he ignored it.
Right back to
life. Yeah, he just cloned. He came right back like 100 clones of himself. Yeah. And he also got mad about the people that made that happen, so he killed all of them instantly.
There we go. That's what I'm saying. Vect doesn't belong in the game. It's like, so who's here? Vect's here. Oh, so you win. Yeah. Oh, let's get myself in trouble. I think Vect beats the crap out of a bunch of custodes.
Yeah, I agree. Dude, and the thing is, you got to look at some of these, and I think that they get like very small residual. They power up and then it goes down and then they stay a little bit more. So you went from 100% to 125 and then it goes back down, but then you're still at 101. And then the next time you torture, you're at 125, but you go down to 102. Yeah. You know what I mean? So on and so forth.
What happens is you do get to a point. This is again why it's hard to do linear stuff in 40K lore because it doesn't make a lot of sense. The best example I have for Drukhari is when we talk about what, not on the tabletop, but what Lilith is in the lore. Lilith is that end of game Final Fantasy where you are grinding and you found like the weapon that removes the damage cap, that removes the HP cap. And now you're just wrecking shop because that's
about Lilith. Gonna hit her with like, Knights of the Round Table.
yeah, Knights of the Round Table, or celestial weapons if you're doing Final Fantasy X. Like that's where the Drukhari get to. So what makes them so cool is that in the lore, the most powerful Drukhari are pushing into Eldar God, like level of power, and it only comes from this power from pain, which is what we should be talking about now. It all comes from their ability to inflict suffering. And actually, and fear, et cetera, in them. Like the new mechanic for them in 11th or in 10th edition makes complete sense. It actually is a very, very, these pain tokens.
That's fantastic.
I love the concept
of pain tokens. Every time you kill something, you get another pain token. But
fail a morale test.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a pain in the ass.
Right. It is. But the thing is, in lore, it's very nice because I'll go with my semi counter Brad theory on when it happened with the fall. I think that they weren't really powering up. They were just enjoying themselves and they got psychic pleasure from it. And then it became an actual need.
And that's what I agree with you completely. I don't think it was something where they were powering up just because of the way the fall went and some of the nobility post fall weren't that powerful. So they should have been like Vectors now.
And Drakkari are such douches about stuff that this is a bad thing that they effectively turned into their good thing. Hey, you are cursed forever to be slowly dying and only the suffering of others keeps you alive. And they're like, I'm okay with that. I'll just power up on it and I'll get slightly better all the time.
A lot of suffering of others.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get really powerful. Why are you asking? I think you just answered my question, which again is why I get annoyed by my Drukhari on the tabletop. From a competitive standpoint, I think they're well written. I think their rules are well balanced. But from a lore standpoint, really, my Drukhari or T3? All of them? Like, feel like, again, Lilith should be a bit better. I'm willing to give you what's his nuts, Urian. I don't care about
it. Well, it's hard for, it's wildly hard to do it. And in the lore, they're kind of all over the place, to be perfectly honest with you, as far as their power levels. Because sometimes the regular guys are getting smoked and the top guys are untouchable. So you're like,
yeah.
And it's not like they're really sharing. After they do a real space raid, it's not like Vec goes around and evenly distributes out all of the people they took. No. Yeah, he's all right, guys, everybody's getting one guy and you're going to spend 2 hours. We're going to do this real even, right? Everybody's going to get their fair share. No, not even remotely. No,
it's all murder. All right, but let's actually that's a good kind of transition to the Cabals. So I think this is me, and I don't care if you play Drukhari and disagree with me. I think the Cabals are the best part of Drukhari. The cults are fast and fun. The cults are fast and fun, but they're not as cool. The Cabals are really fun for me. And the Covens, I know people love playing Coven. It's just tanky, which I find boring. But that's, again, not against you. I also own 11 armies. So if I want to play a tanky army, I own multiple tanky armies. One of them literally has tanks in it. So that's just kind of let's talk about Cabals. Cabals have their roots in the original culture of the Eldar. By the way, no explanations ever given for this, because apparently the Eldar just had a nobility class. No idea how you attain it, what they were, they function. Anything.
Or how it's based. I mean, it's not, never talk about whether it's family based, whether it's what you're just the head of your particular. It's almost, screw it, I'm going to go into it, because that's how it now works, is these are all crime families, kind of. Their nobility is more.
Now they are. That's my point. Now they are. But when it was Eldar, it's just, the thing too is, Eldar also are technically immortal. So it was also this weird thing where, all right, if I'm Eldar nobility, and then I die and reincarnate, or get my soul recycled, like, how does this?
Yeah, these are all the problems I have. Let me give a 2 second Brad rant here. Eldar nobility, before the fall, they were using psychic powers to make reality happen. Who gave a shit who the nobility was? I thought things into reality. cool, man.
It's one of these things that every time I read, I go, hey, wait a minute. Like, just every single time, but whatever, it existed. So eventually, because there were nobles, these nobles fell into the depravity. And this is what really led to the fall pretty heavily, because originally the pleasure cults were in the lower levels. It was just people doing kind of dirty stuff in alleys. And once the nobility found out the joy, it actually became effectively part of Eldar culture. Now, what creates the peace for the Drukhari is that some of the nobles wanted to do even more, because the Eldar could do stuff in the cities, but they were like,
doing back there though?
Yeah.
If you're like, hey man, I'm going to Tuesday fish hooks and night. And you're like, that's super tame for me. What kind of opening the Hellraiser box did you need to make it so that this is a little bit more exciting for you?
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about Kamra then. So Kamra has always existed. And the reason why is the Eldar culture is built on the Webway. Now, they use the Webway. This is their primary mode of transport. And when I say primary, I mean like 95%. The only time you're not using the Webway is where you're going to a world that doesn't have a Webway on it to go build a Webway on that world. That was effectively how it worked. So this massive logistical center for trade and transport is built. And the importance of the Webway is massive, because it therefore started to exist outside the bounds of normal Eldar society.
And this is because Eldar rules and governance.
Well, in a weird way, this is one of these fun things we always, if you know history, this crap never works. The idea being that we'll have this independent place because none of us, we don't want anyone to have rule over it. If any Eldar family or nobility, however the hell this crap worked, got control of the Webway, they would effectively rule the entire Eldar civilization. So the idea was the Webway is its own independent trading port.
Tortuga?
Yeah, but the Tortuga was a pirate comedy. This is more, oh God, there is one, and it's, someone will jump in on notes. There's been a couple of these over time where they're like, this place is totally independent. And then the people running it become super corrupt. It's just a trading port, and it's a horrible, horrible, horrible place. I was going to say Hong Kong. It's not technically true, but maybe it's an era where Hong Kong got like that for a period of time. It was someone the British East India Trade Company utilized. Anyway, but things didn't do well. What happens is some of this nobility that are doing horrible things in real space start building like their vacation homes in Kamara, and eventually moved everybody into Kamara, their whole. Blow your nose.
You're fine. I'm just, my nose is running.
All right. Eventually they move everything into Kamara. The irony is that by doing this, they actually survived. So think of it this way. The vast majority of Eldar culture is doing depravity. The most depraved group, though, felt they couldn't do what they really want to do in real space, so they moved into Kamara to do it. That's who survived the birth of Slaanesh. So they survived. B, we're told, hey, by doing this, that's why you survived. So we're not setting ourselves up for a wonderful, happy place.
This I'm all really in on torture, baby. Factory. Torture and depravity. Don't need to see my hold cards. Let's just rock it.
Yeah, basically, if you were in Kamara at the birth of Slaanesh, you were like, wow, what happened out there? All this. That sucks for them.
You also had to feel pretty bad right away, though. You're like, hey, man, I don't feel super great.
Yeah, that part came later. But or they were in the middle of torturing you. Hey, this is getting better than ever before.
Yeah, that's like, true. You know,
that's more likely what happened. They're
like, I can run faster, jump higher. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's going on, but this stuff is awesome. It's like finding out your pre-workout actually just anabolic steroids. Like,
it's anabolic steroids and cocaine.
Yeah. Turns out, I guess new PR every day. Woo! So over time, though, the cabals do start to come out of this. And let's talk about how that occurs. The nobility of the Dark City had always been militaristic since their creation. If you're building a city that's based on murder and torture, you don't have great neighbors, simply put. So you need to add some extra security. And by extra security, an entire army at your back. And there's not a lot of lore from this time, but it's implied the first few hundred years post-fall of Kamara, there was a settling out period, heavy air quotes there, in which case the noble families started killing each other.
I was going to say, settling out period of wild murder in the streets. Just holy crap.
They had a little, it was just, you know, settling out. We just kind of, let's get ourselves into a rhythm, guys. And to get us there, let's murder 30% of the population and just see what that new rhythm feels like.
It's not even they murdered part of the population. They also went, hey, let's break the webway to restrict where people can go.
But what's important about this is that during this settling out period, it kind of ended with almost, Brad mentioned Tortuga earlier, really good reference. You end up in the situation where everyone around me is a murdering criminal.
To be honest with you, it's not even Tortuga. We'll go to D&D again. It's Menzel-Renzen. It's the Drow City.
Yeah.
For Lost City. You know what I mean?
The challenge you began to run into in the Dark Realm, though, was over time, they started running out of people to kidnap and torture. You need it. It's power from pain, but it's also survival from pain. The first few hundred years, there's a ton of other families I can go kill, random citizens, all this stuff. On the other side of real space, all the webways are gone. Not all, but the vast majority.
Yeah, but
the eye of terror is now there.
Right. Let's also talk about why. Because you made a great point of when you raided another big family, you would have lost resources. You're weak and everybody else looks to go, I'm going to attack you. Why would I go ahead and try to collect bodies from people that are fighting back when I can just go and this is how the real space raids really began is, well, I can just go here and I won't lose anybody. I won't get weak at all. I lose no warriors because I go down to an aggro world. I go down to random outpost and I slice everybody up and I take them home. And you're going to wish that you didn't get captured because, well, magic exists here. So
Yeah, and what ends up happening is the key part of this is that Harad culture, much like Eldar culture, have no monetary currency to speak of, right? Yeah. The only currency that exists within the Drukhari is survival from the death curse.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holidays are almost here. And if you still have names in your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful. With thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else, you'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods is a fantastic collection of products that are unique, funny, and clever. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. For me, the holidays are full of family and entertaining, which is a lot easier with a combo of a robust bar and weird games to play. So after Fart Bingo and a Whiskey Smoker, I decided to double down on some infusers and a game called Poorly Explained Movies. Hopefully, this will get me through it. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, diehard sports fans to foodies. You'll find thousands of gifts of new ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
So what you need to do is, if I'm a noble family, I need to not only feed myself the pleasure from pain, I have to feed all of my subordinates this. And what I was just talking about before, what the challenge you run into is that within the Dark Realm, within 100 years or 200 years, there's no one left to harvest. They're either fully well-armed, or if they've survived this long, they're really good at surviving and fighting. So you can't go there. So what do? They then start peeking out of the webways that they could activate that were out, that didn't take you into the Eye of Terror. Guarantee you, there were quite a few bad jumps initially. They were,
oh,
100%. And I'm dead.
You're like,
walk on Slaanesh with your hair. Like,
you're like, you went, hey, where's this door go? Oh, man. Yeah.
There's just a whole section of cameras with just a nope just written on the outside of the webway. Try the next one, guys. This is a no-go, or tricking your friends to go through it. But they did find on quite a few worlds that they were occupied. Occupied by a species, by the way, that had no concept of the webway. Webway portals. And if you get really lucky, don't even know about the Eldar. So these become, because that means, don't forget, the Eldar are a superior species in the galaxy. They are faster, smarter, and more technologically advanced than anyone else in the galaxy, barring the Necrons, but they weren't awake yet. So we're going with that. So they begin preying on any civilization they can find. This is the origin of the real space raids. These were super small scale. You go in, grab a few dozen people, and go back, because they didn't really have it structured yet.
Well, and you had to remember that they have to give enough for all your subordinates. So this isn't go grab 10 people for me to feed on. You have to give something to everybody. But you also have to figure it out, because you got to keep enough. You have to give everybody enough to keep them alive and well and happy, so they don't just revolt and or join someone else. But also, you don't want to get enough people that they're more powerful than you, and they beat the crap.
Well, that's about to become a bigger problem. So what we were discussing there is the early raids. What you just described is the much nastier part, which is post-Vect.
Yep.
Vect, we've covered him. Brad likes him more than I do. I find him fine.
Oh, I love him.
But all right, do it for everybody. As dribble as the bolt, Eric. Eric Vect is was born a slave.
Keep it consistent. Just call him Ted.
Ted. Yeah.
Ted Vect.
I think Theodore Vect would work.
He is a ruler. Theodore Vect here. Again, Vect. Monocle, top hat, definitely walking.
And honestly, the amount he's been cloned, it's like Theodore Vect, the 480th.
Yeah, for sure.
At this point. But anyway, Vect was born a slave within the Dark City. He's one of the many horrifying lower level Denzians. He creates a crime gang. He rises to power, and it culminates with him ruling all of the Dajukari and Kamra.
By the way, listen to our cast on this, because he does a end of Godfather take care of everyone at the same time.
Yeah, it was cool as shit. So yes. What happens is he then effectively wipes out the nobility class. He murders most of them.
In a day.
Yeah. But he doesn't kill all of them. What he says is that you rule by might and by right. And so what happens is the entirety of the Drukhari culture shifts over to this. And in fact, Vec basically says, like, your birthright is as valuable as a Prussian franc. Like, full stop. Like, I don't care about that. You want to be in charge? Earn it. So the nobility take on these new titles, by the way, of Trueborn Drukhari, which have gone having rules to not having rules to having rules to never having rules again, it looks like. And all they also are is
Pinkies out.
Oh, yeah. But a Trueborn Drukhari, just I want to cover real quick for everybody. A Trueborn Drukhari is just a member of the former Eldar nobility who is still alive. So these are 11,000 year old.
It's natural Eldar. Born Eldar, basically, not clones.
But there, I don't think there is any more natural birth occurring, is what I'm getting at.
No, so that's what I'm saying. Those are what they are.
If you had a true born Drukhari, that's 11,000 years old at least, which is.
He should probably be better than Weapon Skill 4. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you think so? You think Weapon Skill 4 should be better than that? Maybe they
If you've been working the jab for 11,000 years, it's probably a goddamn good jab.
That's right. We had Trueborn. Was it in ninth? Yeah, Trueborn where they hit on twos.
Yep.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah, no one liked that. No one liked that army. And I watched you play that army. I watched you win a tournament with that army. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. It was awesome. And it's good. It made sense lore wise. Just oopsies in the rule writing. So Cabals, I want to dive into now is the creation of the Cabals comes out of this. You have some of the nobility were able to hold on to their power and they converted their noble house into a Cabal, but a lot of others rose up from the start to the bottom. Now we're here. God, I hate Drake. Anyway, but that's how they came into being. Now, the way Cabals are described can either be very lazy or very good. The lazy way of describing them is calling them a crime syndicate or a crime organization. They're not. I think there's a hierarchy, but that's about it. They're super complex and very creative. I think of the Cabals more as British colonies during the rule of the British Empire. So each Cabal has autonomy over themselves and their region, and they can do carte blanche in that area, but they still behold.
I was going to say, one of the things why it's a little bit of both, they're so big that they can't be considered just a crime family because of the fact that they supply everything. They do everything. Every cabal is completely self-contained. It doesn't need anyone else.
Yeah. However, Theodore Vect is going to he is in charge. That's full stop. Or you can try to not. And this is similar to the Imperium in that regard. In the Imperium, if your tithes are flowing, the Imperium leaves you alone. In Kamara, as long as you show fealty to Vect and you follow what Vect is telling you to do, you're fine. You are welcome to challenge him, and many have tried. They're all dead. Now, what I like is the way a cabal grows, though. So if you want to challenge Vect, you can, but you have to grow. The way it works is, Vect rules Kamra with a true iron fist. It's not that Kamra is peaceful and orderly. It's the opposite. It's just that Kamra follows the rules Vect puts down, which is might is right. Every night. Yeah. Every single night, Kamra is filled with the screams of people dying. The city is almost at war with itself. Rivals are killing each other for power, control, and looking to advance themselves or weaken their enemies so as to advance themselves. And the first true cabal that came out of this was Vect's. It was personal cabal,
the Black Cabal Heart. The Black Heart.
Yeah. It was made up of all lowborn criminals, and Vect then kind of brought them together. They also were incredible at espionage, infiltration, etc. And when Vect exploded, he wiped everybody out and created almost a power vacuum that he then just stepped into and took control over. Now, this concept that he then did was he looked around and said, well, how did I achieve this? And I achieved this because I wanted more than other people wanted. And that became the structure of the cabals within Kamra. To this end, anyone can create a cabal. You don't need permission to create a cabal. One thing about the cabals, when they start, they're like gangs. This can be just a couple Drukhari, or it could be a multi-billion member cabal, like Blackheart. Is it Poison Tongue? What's the other really big
Poison
one?
Tongue. Poison Tongue's huge, too. Okay.
And so the whole city is in this like survival of the fittest style, much like movie Escape from New York, which if you haven't seen, that's on you, because Kurt Russell with an eye patch is a gem. And also, even better, if you don't watch Captain Escape. Ron.
That was fantastic.
Well, because Captain Ron, if you think about it, it's the third part in the Snake Plissken trilogy, because he goes Escape from New York, then he has Escape LA, and then he does Escape to the Caribbean, which apparently is quite nice.
God. Also, Escape from LA is terrible.
It's not that good. Escape from New York is not that good either. I hate to break it to you. But you know what is
good?
You
get away from that. Snake Plissken doesn't take that.
You know what is really good, though? Captain Ron.
Captain Ron is fantastic. When he keeps switching the eye patch from eye to eye.
Exactly. That move is quite good. It's so stupid. Kurt Russell. Anyway, so back to the cast. All cabals start off as small organizations. Groups of warriors from like the lost echelons of the Dark City banding together. But they all have the same high goal. They want to be Vect. Most of them die, if I'm being honest. Because they don't really see.
He does get challenged quite frequently. Vect puts down threats a lot. But in some of those threats, he actually absorbs them in. Hey, it didn't work. But, you know, I'm going to keep you alive because you actually had promise. You got Moxie, well, kid.
Yeah, because that's the thing. The truth is, every Drukhari, the Eldar are elitists. They don't see a difference between themselves and Vect. They see no reason why they shouldn't be Vect. It really, it's them and the Necrons are the two where you're like, you guys are out of your freaking minds. But that is it. They see difference. So they're always trying to move their way up. And this is what creates this like kind of churning of cabals. You've got, when we read the books and you read your codex, you've got your main cabals. But there is a consistent like churn of new cabals coming up. And the trick to this is gaining power and influence. So most cabals have their origins, except for like the few who came from nobility, in like almost what I would call a sub-cabal, just backstabbing within the inner city. The trick to it is you can actually grow your cabal to what Brad was just talking about by being aligned with a bigger cabal, Blackheart bring you in, unofficially. Most of the cabals have their origins in what I would call a sub-cabal. And with this is because there's all this backstabbing within the Dark City. But you have to be careful with your backstabbing, because if you upset the wrong group, you could find yourself at outright war. And the thing about outright war in the Dark City is you will both die, because you're going to fight each other. And once the battle's finished, other people are going to come in and finish you both off. So if you really want to eliminate a rival, you need to get someone else to do it for you. And best way to do that is either to get the Mandrakes to do it, which is going to cost you a lot, or you get a sub-cabal doing these like small 5-10 groups. These fledgling cabals are always looking for a way to impress, for lack of a better phrase. So they'll do stuff for Vect. They'll do stuff for anybody. The example but a lot of times they won't know who they're doing their work for. So if you've ever seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and if you haven't, go watch it now. Turn us off. That's better than we are. But that's one of the themes in that. Snatch actually a little bit as well, too.
Or Usual Suspects, you're working for Kaiser Soze.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Two movies that are light years more entertaining than that movie.
I will set fire to your office. You step away from Kaiser Soze.
You are not going to tell me Usual Suspects is more entertaining or enjoyable.
Favorite movie.
Lock, Stock. Doesn't mean you're right.
I've been wrong and I will be wrong again, sir.
No. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying, if you're like, pure entertainment value. But anyway, should a fledgling cabal in this system start having success, their numbers will swell. Just how Vect was born a slave in the Dark City, millions, maybe trillions more are. And they're looking for a way to improve their lot in life. And so what they're always looking for is, how do I join another group or make my own group to then grow? Now, as I said, most of them end up dead if they're lucky. If they're unlucky, a coven gets a hold of them.
And I love, but one of my favorites is with the Cabal structure is you have to either overplay your power so that people don't mess with you, or you have to act small and draw in because there's that weird walking the knife's edge of, hey, these guys look like a threat. We got to end them.
And they're gone. Bingo. Right. And so this is really, but that's why one thing about the Cabals is they're really, really, really good at espionage and subterfuge. The ones who were successful, the rest of them all die off, because to Brad's exact point there, that's the trick. You have to grow yourself, but not let anyone know how powerful you are until you're powerful enough to fight anyone off. So there's that middle ground of just pure danger.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's a, oh, no, I'm in danger.
Yes. One other piece about the Cabals that becomes an issue for them to what we're discussing here is there seems to be a limited amount of power available within the Dark City. And what I mean by that is it's not a firm thing, but it appears that, like, in order for one Cabal to come up, another Cabal has to come down. It's not that there's a fixed amount, but it's kind of a fixed amount. All right.
In the infinite place.
As a result, Cabals aren't really happy to attack other Cabals, but they have to. And the reason why is that I have to attack the other Cabal in order to gain power and move them out. But once I attack the other Cabal, everyone knows that I'm willing to attack Cabals. And they are also a Cabal and don't want that to happen. And it's basically Highlander. That's what this is. This was stolen from Highlander. You know, in Highlander, if someone starts chopping off other Highlander heads, everyone knows that's a bad Highlander. You shouldn't be around him. And I don't know how else to explain this. Well, actually, there was 1,000 better examples I could use to explain this than Highlander. But I just want to take a moment to remind everybody that in the movie Highlander, Sean Connery was playing a Spaniard and he made zero effort to do anything involving Spain. He actually sounds more Scottish in this movie than he does in The Rock. Anyway.
You know what? Step away from that, because he was the best Russian submarine commander with his Scottish.
Oh, you're right. That's the other one. Yeah. In which movie did Sean Connery make less of an effort? Hunt for Red October or Highlander to not be Scottish? Jesus, man.
Very proud Scotsman.
Yeah, it's more this piece of, look, you're an actor and a good actor. I know he can do an accent. He just chose not to. That's amazing. Ugh. Anyway, Cabals.
I love everywhere where this cast has gone today.
We do old movie references. All right. So as a result of this, most of the fighting within the Dark City is actually done by the lower level Cabals. The ones that are so small, the larger Cabals don't really care. And they fight amongst themselves and occasionally pick at the larger Cabals. The idea here for the successful Cabals is I'm not going to outright chop the head off my opponent. Because as we discussed also during the Drukhari cast, that opponent probably has covens that are supporting them so they can regenerate. So it's actually really hard to kill the leader. I need to slowly wither away their power so that they become weak enough that not only I, but everyone preys on them at once. And they just disappear. I end up feeding.
You take away logistics and resources. That's what you're doing.
That's the main thing. In order to do this, you need allies. And to get these allies, you're going to get mercenaries or other Cabals. And that's going to cost resources. So how do you get those resources? Now we'll get into the real space raid. Because at its core, this is the most important part of the Drukhari lore from a tabletop to lore perspective. Why are the Drukhari even in the game? Real space raids. So a real space raid is when Drukhari use the webway to jump into real space. Once they're there, it's just a full-blown assault and slaughter and capture. That's what they're trying to do. And then disappear back into the webway. The goal is to use the raid both as a boost to those raiding and also to bring supplies to strengthen their position back in the Dark Realm.
But during the raid, sometimes the raid will continue longer than normal because during the raid, the Drukhari are getting faster, stronger, more agile, more precise, because they're powering up from all the pain and suffering that they're doing. And they actually have weaponry and war gear that's designed to heighten the fear and the terror and the dying suffering from everybody that they're fighting. They have tons of stuff that's not supposed to kill, but incapacitate and cause you pain as you're going to further power them up. And this in lore and tabletop works very well with that, because you power up during the fight. You come in fast and furious, but like, you really rock and roll once it starts going. Cause then they've got some great story. Excuse me. They've got some great stories of this in a lot of the short stories with Drakari raids, where they show up, and then as the raid goes on, you can't even see their movements anymore. They're so quick going on.
Yeah. And what I want to talk about, the way the raids would go down, just give me some examples, is Drakari really are trying to harm and create fear. So they'll sit there. They use poison rounds, by the way, and they'll sit there and just plink at people and let it, because it's not just the person that they hit with poison whose, you know, insides are turning to fire and melting, who's screaming, that's giving them joy, but it's also the people around that person panicking and getting scared also feeds them. So they have to, it's multiple layers of horror is what they're doing. Others just go super fast, lopping heads off. And the goal here is to get this thing almost into a fervor where the sounds of people screaming is louder than the weapons and the jet technology that they're using. Because it is all about panic devastation. And I do want to call something out here. This is different than like a World Eater, Emperor's Children, Night Lord, or Chaos attack. Those ones also violent, high level of suffering. I mean, it sucks, don't get me wrong. But the way the Drakari do it is much more amplified. Like a Night Lord raid is designed.
It's an art form, my friend, an art form. Well,
they're all art forms, though. It's just different, but with different goals. Like a Night Lord's, they love to create enough like havoc and problems that the people actually turn on themselves.
Yeah, they've had whole populaces kill each other.
Yeah, that's what they want. The Carcharodons are still lawful good, or chaotic good.
there's never been something you've been more wrong about than that.
Oh, I'm taking so much grief from that. I don't care. The World Eaters also, a lot of slaughter, but it's blood for the blood god. They're not always looking for combat per se, but it's not just a wholesale slaughter. They're looking to actually create fights. Even the Emperor's Children, as decadent as the Slaanesh are, it's still different.
They're very close,
but it's different.
There's why Slaanesh cults happen in Drakari, because they want stuff.
They come from it's the same origin of the story, but they are different in the way that the Drakari power up. The Slaanesh, similar, but the difference is that the Slaaneshi cults also, they're more just pure capture, because don't forget the Slaanesh need to get you back into the dark, back into the warp. So.
Yeah, well, we've talked about it in our Drakari cast, which is a lot of times when you have real space raids, you have coalitions, because everybody, you're trying to convince all your, basically your biggest enemies to show up with you, so that if anybody takes a loss, everybody takes a loss, even though it never happens that way. But that's what you're trying to do.
That's a good point. So let's talk about the planning phase of Drakari, because the Drakari have a huge problem in the lore and on the tabletop. They are a glass cannon. They are built for speed and power. So everything that they do is designed to go fast and hit hard. The thing is that when you're maximizing damage and speed, you don't maximize armor.
It's not even just that. They also have to be able to experience the pain and suffering. So they can't be in a big armored shell. But because you're maximizing your ability for me to hear your screams, you're like, hey, man, is Brad just hanging his head out of an open top vehicle? Yeah, it maximizes his enjoyment of screams. It also maximizes my chance that I'm going to get shot in the face. And this is a problem.
And so what happens for the Drakari is they can't withstand a counterattack, in effect. And this is in the lore, also on the tabletop. I've experienced what happens when your witches bounce. It's not fun. They just stand there and go, so we're all dead now? As a result, they have to do two things to make themselves successful. First, their style of warfare, and we covered this in the Drukhari cast. It's layering levels of attack designed to, you know, the Ravagers and the Raiders come in, taking out emplacements. Venoms and Hellions start terrorizing the outlying forces. Then witches, incubi, Cabalites all descend. Coven members may join in on this. It's designed to be, but this layered attack of removing key installations as they go to. But they also need to have planning. And we're going to get into that in a second. And that's because in the Dark Realm, there's nothing more valuable than the slaves brought back in a real space raid. You bring back a good real space raid can actually elevate a cabal like many times because, as we said, the only currency that exists in Kamara is slaves, pain, and torture. So if I've got a bunch of them, I can then barter those for alliances or, more importantly, mercenaries. Incubi, for example, if I'm an Archon and I want to move around the Dark City safely, having a coterie, of incubi around me make me effectively invincible. But those incubi aren't doing that for because I have a good personality. They're doing it for a reason. So I have to form these alliances. Now, when we talk about these alliances, one of the big alliances you can do is a real space raid alliance. So I'm getting some of the larger cabals don't have to do this, but most cabals are going to need to bring people with them. And they can be with other cabals, so your rivals. It can be with witch cults who actually may, by the way, be associated with your rival, but they're witch cults. And covens, you might have scourges, mandrakes, if you really want to party and bring in demons who are not demons, but are totally demons. All of them want to come in. So I got it. I've set my raid up. Now, what's going to happen is I can't just say, hey, I'm going a real space raid. Do you want to come? Because the flip side is, well, if your real space raid sucks, I die. So I don't want to do that. So they need to actually show why is this real space raid going to be successful? And this is where Drukhari, to me, gets super cool. The Drukhari plan these things out meticulously. They are still Eldar. So it could be something as simple as, oh, I picked up a rumor from a Corsair fleet about this unprotected settlement. Or a slave you're torturing is just will say anything, and they'll tell you about a settlement that's or planet that's totally exposed. They also will do stuff where they'll actually implant, I don't know, it's hard to, they just say, implanting things in people to turn them into thralls. It's not really clear how that works.
Yeah, they have like mind control. Those are like a coven thing on that. But they basically bring back information and or turn off the shields or whatever, you know?
Yeah, they'll take a person who they've captured and they'll implant this in their skull and then send out. The Necrons do this too. But it's in the Infinite Divine. Trazen does this. And they'll send you back out to your city. And then while there, you'll just wander over to the force field button and turn it off or the radar button and turn it off. That now knowing they can do that, this is what they then go to their potential allies for and say, look, this is our plan. This is where we're going. Here are the defenses. Here's how many people are there. Here's what I think will be great. So then we go into the real space raid. Phase one's pretty simple. The raid happens. They go out there. They do their things. And
can we have that again? Ta-da! Ta-da!
It's a raid. The raid occurs. There is slaughter. Everyone on the raid is just having a grand old time. They are loaded up. There's so much power that's coming from all this pain. They are having A+ 5-star good time. But then they get back into the Dark City, which is phase two, which I find more interesting. So
let me set this up real quick. It's one of the things we didn't talk about, which is phase two is probably the bigger phase because phase two, you have to be ready for everyone to jump you as soon as you come back into the Dark City, as soon as you enter back into Kamara.
And so this is why some of the deals you made before going to real space raid weren't actually for people to come with you. It was for people to be there for you when you get back. So it's like a large portion of the real space raid bounty is spoken for. You either have it for alliances on the raid. So, you know, hey, this coven comes with you. So they're taking 10%. Or it could be for people who are protecting you back at home. It also can just be to feed your own people. You have to fill your holds of your cabal. You have to give them over to the witch cults, etc. So all this is designed and spoken for. But you also do usually have a chunk that you save for bartering. And this is buying new services from Covens to ensure the longevity of Narcon, trading with Corsairs for more equipment or information. You might be a gift to a witch cult to strengthen your alliance with them. Mandrakes. This is one way you can get mandrakes on your side. A very, very good ally. Useless model in the game. The other one, too, that they'll do with some is actually give them as tribute to another cabal to gain favor. You wouldn't go to Blackheart if you want, but it's probably a little bit too far above your pay grade. But the idea being it's the way to gain favor and say, look, this is how good we are at real space raiding. Can we join you? Can we merge together, et cetera?
Can you give me more jobs, basically? I will do things. 100%.
Because the real goal of the real space raid itself is never actually the raid. It's what the raid can do for the cabal. Everything else doesn't really matter. The gain you get in power from that is, as we discovered, is fleeting. So even though I got super powered up on this raid, I'm now going to lose power. So how does this raid make it so that I maintain more power going forward? That's that. So that's a real space raid. The last thing I want to talk about, though, before we finish is, because I'm in the middle of this right now, is the cabals themselves. And one of my favorite reasons to play Drukhari, because we never touched this last time, is they're one of the few factions that you can really do whatever you want with, and it still stays lore-centric.
100% lore-centric.
Yeah. As I said before, I own a lot of armies, and almost all of the armies I own are a homebrew. My Eldar are their own craft world. They're black and red. My Tyranids are black and silver for their hive fleet. My Guard are a kind of a camo style, but it's a combined regiment. I've got Cadians, Kriegsmen, general regiments all built into there. My Votan are Santa Claus themed, which was not intentional. It's just that's what happens when you batch paint with Rakarth flesh and Mephiston red. And
I do love the fact that you made Santa Claus on all your guys with long beards.
By accident. I think 60 models in, I'd done the Rakarth on all of them, and I was going through the Mephiston and looked down like, why do these look familiar? And then it occurred to me, I'd made 45 Santa Clauses. I didn't feel like stripping them, so screw it. So now every model I have is Santa Claus, is what it is. My Harlequins are a checkered pattern. They're similar to Veiled Path, but it's a little bit different. My Orcs are my Orcgasm army, as I said before. Really, the only armies I have that are traditionally painted are Imperial Agents, my Death Watch, but they've got custom.
I just want to say, yeah. Not really.
Yeah, my Thousand Sons, my Demons, and my Death Guard. Those are all traditional. But the reason I say that is that with my Drukhari, I have this like hodgepodge of Drukhari. Everything is painted differently. And it's one of the few armies Guard works this way, but where you can do that and it looks cool.
You know, because it's supposed to be that way, because you're bringing in witch cults, you're bringing in covens, you're bringing in all your cabal, and your cabal might have sub cabals. So on the board, mm-hmm. It should look like you're basically just full of mercenaries that have been paid to fight for you.
For those of you who build and paint armies, the coolest part about Drukhari is you can take a Drukhari army and have different bases. You can have different paint schemes, different everything all throughout. And it actually makes sense. Like you could, I'm going to run a list in January of 26 at the Glass City. Good event. I'll be there. I'll bring my Drukhari. My witch cults that I'm bringing to that will be different. My two different witch cults will look very different from each other. My warriors will look different from each other. Even the ships themselves are all a little bit different. I love that about them because it looks cool. It looks like, oh, this is a real space raid because all these people came together to take part in this raid. So for those of you who, you know, are looking for an army to build out and paint, I always recommend Drukhari. They're a very fun army to play. Yeah, they're fun. They're horrible, horrible human creatures in the lore. Oh, God. Oh, God. But that's that. But with that, let's take a break. We spent a lot of time talking about Drukhari and how they prey on settlements. So we might as well talk about someone who has a history of standing up to the Drukhari.
A noble man.
He's no Gilliman. Yeah. We're going to do this. We're doing salamanders.
Salamanders!
Salamanders were a long time coming. The reason that we've waited so long for everyone to know is that we were waiting on GW to expand their lore. They did release a Vulcan model.
Yeah, but wrong one.
Also, none of you guys said how disappointed Brad was in that. It was remarkable. Brad was hyped, thinking that he was getting a Vulcan model. Salamanders were getting a book. It's going to be the 10th
edition. Yeah, it was even worse because they did the release and everybody sent me, "Did you see the new Vulcan?" I'm like, "Oh, of course we did. It's going to be awesome." And I don't even remember where I was, but I was driving and I came back and I was got so excited to check it out. It's just a new Vulcan Heston model.
It was Ted. Yeah, it was Ted. That's what you got. You were expecting, you're expecting the largest, most strongest, and in your mind, noblest Primarch. And instead, you got Ted the Salamander.
He was going to be awesome.
Yeah.
God.
Anyway, there's still hope for Dorne. Maybe we'll get Dorne.
You know, don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
Oh, God. It's nothing I want more. I mean, given what they just did at Khalgar, imagine they had a Dorne model. You'd have to play it at every tournament.
He's so busted.
Yeah. All right. But anyway, with that, this is John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you all next week. Have you tried going back and playing the games you played as a kid?
We're talking nostalgia overload, fun facts, and seeing if we can remember how to beat games we haven't played in 30 years.
Come join us. Retro Recall is all about nostalgia and reliving those years of zero responsibility.
Each episode, John makes me play a game from our youth, and I challenge him to do something in that game, and then the loser has to try one of the worst games ever made.
It's fun, it's terrible, but most of all, it's a look back at simpler times.
In the first episode, we try Double Dragon 2, and let's just say that John is still having nightmares about some of the terrible games he had to play.
You say that, but I'm not the only one. Ghoul School?
Dear God.
Check out Retro Recall on YouTube and your favorite audio podcast platforms.
There are links in the main show description, or just search Retro Recall.
Retro Recall. Come join us. Games are always better with friends. Retro Recall.